Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney, thanks so much for hanging with us. So the RNC is ramping up staffing just like the Democrats are doing. And where are they doing that? Of course, Georgia, because you've got those two big runoff Senate races that are coming up. And they're saying, the RNC is saying they're going to spend at least $20 million ahead of those and ahead of those races. And the same thing with the Democrats. They say they're going to try to match them on that. So, boy, get ready to be bombarded for all the people listening to me in Georgia. You already are, by massive campaign ads. You know, the ones you saw before, well, they might be a little bit different, but they're going to still be on every time you turn around. That's what you're going to see. Not any of those, ho, 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 here's a Christmas deal. No, it's going to be, ho, 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 here's who you need to vote for, and here's why. Because that kind of money, I mean, they could put it on billboards and mags, but where they're going to get their bang for their buck is on radio and on TV. So you're really, we're going to get hit hard by that. Unless you're a streamer beamer and you're binging on Netflix, yeah, look out. All right, how about this? So the president is the ultimate crafty fundraiser. $170 million the president's raised since November, since the election. That's crazy. That's unheard of in the world of fundraising in the political sense. And this will go toward whatever the futuristic run is, paying off bills from before, but then also heaping a bunch of that money toward what's next, politically speaking. And I think it's obvious that 2024 is not just some hot air that's being blown out there at all. That there's a very good chance that you have not seen the last of President Trump. There's a lot of support, and there's a lot of money there, and there's a lot of backing. And so then you look ahead, and you think, well, the amount of backing, the amount of Twitter followers, the amount of people who aren't happy because we live in the polarized nation of the United Divided States of America. And so, honestly, it'll be so interesting to watch what the next moves are, right? I recently have gotten interested in chess, but only because of The Queen's Gambit, which is a show that was on Netflix that I got talked into to watching, and it's really about all the chess moves, and it's fascinating to me, but I don't know anything about it. I like play checkers, right, and backgammon. But looking at the pawns and looking at where the queen and the king and the various moves on the board, I mean, ultimately, this is exactly what we're going to see for the next 4 years. What are the Republicans going to do overall? And what happens with the president as he steps back from the next four what does he do for these four in between? And I think it's going to be something where he definitely has some sort of a microphone and has some sort of a voice, because he already does on Twitter, where you see other presidents. That's, you know, that's it. I mean, of course, they had the last three presidents before President Trump had their double-double, meaning that they were eight-year presidents, you know, two-term presidents. So they are out, boom. They step away and do some speeches and write books and that kind of stuff. Although Obama became more vocal at the tail end of this election in pushing for Joe Biden, but normally you're not seeing any of that. But I think this president is going to be the exception to, hey, he's going to have plenty of opinions about what's happening in Congress. And remember, he knows and has worked with so many of the people. So he would be the ultimate, he would be in the ultimate seat and in a rare position to leverage it. And I think that's exactly what we will see. All right. In the meantime, there still is the ballot bungle that is being talked about. What was bungled? Was there ballots that were bungled? Blah, blah, blah. You know, on and on. And one of the things that I was looking at today a little bit closer is this conservative law firm is saying that several whistleblowers from the United States Postal Service are saying that, you know, they've come forward and they're alleging that thousands of ballots in some states were backdated, tampered with, tossed out ahead of the 2020 election. And, you know, who does that benefit? I mean, doesn't mean that they were all Trump. It could certainly have been plenty of them for Biden. So watching this will be interesting, because the Amistad project of what they call the Thomas More Society is moving ahead with an independent investigation of the alleged voter fraud in some of these battleground states that the president lost. And they're claiming that the FBI asked them to turn over their findings to the Los Angeles field office. And the FBI told Fox and some other news outlets that it's not their standard practice to confirm or deny the existence of investigations. So again, typical bureaucracy, they're not going to comment on it. But the Amistad project said that multiple whistleblowers did lob some serious accusations at multi-state illegal efforts by the USPS workers to influence the election in at least three of the swing states. And again, what does that mean? These are just allegations. And some of these claims have been debunked, by these lawsuits that have been filed in Michigan, Wisconsin, Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Georgia, alleging voter fraud in the presidential election. But the wheels keep turning. That's the thing. The wheels keep turning and where all that ends. In the meantime, the scaffolding is being put up for January 20th, which is when Joe Biden would be sworn in as the next president of the United States. But keep your eye out for what happens in between with this president, because I think it's going to be interesting to see the platforms that he uses, no question about it. All right, COVID and the challenges that lie ahead. Yep, we're talking about it on the flip side.
The stress levels of Americans may be at an all-time high. From education to business to basic needs to politics, the 2020 pandemic-related stressors are pushing many of us to near breaking point. That's why you should consider the stress and pain-relieving products from sunny-bay.com, like our lavender neck wraps and pads infused with premium Washington lavender buds. They relieve tension and relax with a soothing scent of lavender. And lifestyle expert Jennifer Bonner recommends products from Sunny Bay.
Sunny Bay's hands-free neck wrap should be your go-to pain relief solution.
Give gifts to family and friends that relieve stress and pain. Give love and care by giving the best. Give pillows, neck wraps, and body wraps from sunny-bay.com, a Biomed DB design company. Just click sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com.
Attention business owners, body slammed by overwhelming debt. If your business is in trouble, hassled by creditors, if you're frustrated, finally fed up with big business bailouts while your business has been left for dead, please listen close. There's a brand new fast-track bankruptcy. Some have even called it the biggest small business bailout in American history. Designed for individuals and their businesses. And look, almost no one knows about this yet. My attorney wasn't even aware of it. The truth is, beating the system has never been easy because it's rigged in a sense against the little guy. But here's the jaw-dropping news nobody's talking about. They've literally just changed the system so that you can beat it. But only if you understand how the new game has to be played. Find out if you qualify at pocketsoflight.com. This government-backed small business repair program is still legal, but may not be renewed after the election. Fight back fairly, fight back ethically at pocketsoflight.com.
This is sponsored by Amazon. This holiday season, Amazon is delivering smiles to charities across the country with the help of celebrity partners Gabrielle Union and Ali Raisman. And it's easy for customers to join them in giving back. Kate Scarpa, Amazon spokesperson.
We're proud to support charities that have been impacted by the challenges of this year. And customers can also join us in giving back by shopping through Amazon Smile. By starting at smile.amazon.com, customers can find incredible holiday deals, low prices, and convenient shopping, with the added bonus that Amazon will donate a portion of their purchase price directly to the charity of their choice at no cost to them.
Customers can also donate items to charities directly at smile.amazon.com/charity lists, where nonprofits create wish lists of the items needed most. Additionally, shoppers can donate to Toys for Tots by saying, "Alexa, donate to Toys for Tots," or make a monetary donation to a charity of their choice by saying, "Alexa, I want to make a donation." Learn more and give back this season at smile.amazon.com.
It falls, and I'm alone. Skin catching into your bone. You turn.
So Facebook's season of giving campaign is here. They launched a drive, a couple of drives, a new feature on Community Help Giving Tuesday, $7 million match in donations to U.S. profits. Just a huge, huge event. I love the fact that there's the $7 million match in donations to U.S. nonprofits, and the new drives are features on the Community Help pages that can encourage people to give however they can, because giving, of course, is so big now, especially this time of year, but throughout this whole season. And Facebook is celebrating people who are giving back in interesting, inspiring ways, and they're showing how everybody has something to give, no matter what it is that they have jingling around in their pocket. And so Naomi Gleit is the VP of products at Facebook. Naomi, how does this all work?
With many out of work and food insecurity affecting nearly one in three people in the U.S. due to COVID-19, a lot of people are relying on the generosity of others right now. To encourage people to give in whatever way they can this holiday season, Facebook is kicking off a season of giving campaign today, because even a small act of kindness can make a big difference to someone.
Yeah, that's true. Any kind of act of kindness, it's just what swells people in their hearts, especially now, that's for sure. All right, a couple of quick sort of odds and ends that I'm going to throw in here. And it includes something that I got from an economist that I really respect, and his name is Elliot Eisenberg. And so he sent me something about the percentage of employees going to work that, you know, on 4/8/20, think about when that was, March, we were at 14, that's the whole pandemic thing, started COVID, 14.9% consisted of the maintenance and mostly essential workers that were part of that 14.9% that were going to work. Then it rose and peaked mid to late October at 27.4%. Since then, it hasn't exceeded 27.1% of people going to work in the United States to offices, etc. The return rate is the lowest in San Francisco. That makes sense because they shut down a bunch with Governor Gavin Newsom and what's happening in California. So they're at 13.4%, and tech firms, of course, are encouraging their people to work from home. The rate is highest in a car commuting area. That would be Dallas, Texas, at 40.3%. And, of course, our satellite facility is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I noticed in the last month or so that there's been an uptick in cars than they actually have traffic, that there are actually traffic reports where there are accidents because there is a rush hour again in the morning, in the afternoon, and so I'm not surprised by Elliot's findings. And the more we see that number inch up, we know things are getting better. And like I said, you know, when we talk about odds and ends and COVID and what's happening with the vaccine and the reports of 271,000 deaths out of 13.8 million cases in the U.S., deaths worldwide, 1.48 million total cases worldwide, 63.8 million, 41 million people have recovered. Let's keep watching that number climb, 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 climb. And COVID vaccines and who gets it first, it's pretty much been determined. It's up to states ultimately. They have to submit what they're going to do by Friday. But, you know, again, as long as the vaccines get approved, which is looking like that's going to happen, the Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices voted to include what they're calling phase one of this distribution plan. And it's no secret that it's healthcare workers and residents of long-term care facilities. They would be in line to get it first, because you look at the fatality rates that we've had in those areas, and you know, when you've had 240,000 healthcare workers infected with the virus and 858 have died, that's what you're going to see: emergency rooms, anybody dealing with COVID patients, all of that, absolutely. And the early intel data on the Pfizer and Moderna vax suggests that both are safe and effective, preventing 95% of symptomatic infections in the people who have volunteered to test them, according to the companies. And that just has to get stamped by the FDA, who are looking over their shoulders. And, you know, there you go. Moving forward, it is probably June or so until everybody that would want a vaccine would get a vaccine. But the fact that they're available by the end of December, by 2020, is really a good thing compared to what we were hearing in the past. And think about the logistics and think about how you're getting it and going to the states and then the states deciding how ultimately they're parceling it out, because there's going to have to be some sort of in between, I would think, where not everybody that they want on that list is going to be able to get that in the first round, because that's key, is then moving on to the second group and who are the second group of people. And then after that, the third group, and, you know, moving from there. And there is a bipartisan lawmaker group, I was talking about money for COVID, offering $908 billion in a COVID-19 relief bill. And that's these bipartisan group of senators that say it would fund measures through March 31st. It would include $228 billion in additional paycheck protection program funds for hotels, restaurants, small businesses. And then state and local governments would get aid under the bipartisan bill, too. Senator Mitt Romney, who was part of this group, said the plan has $560 billion in repurposed funding from the CARES Act that was enacted in March. So there's not going to be people that are going to be happy about this, but it's interesting the lineup of people who have worked on it. It's, I mean, truly, you have people that are philosophically on opposite sides of the aisle, the brain, and everything else. It is a bipartisan group. We'll see where it goes, but they're going to have some sort of a compromise if it's going to advance in any way. And a compromise would also include $300 per week in additional unemployment benefits. That would be in the package, too, because remember, it was $600 that people were getting, and then that completely disappeared. So Nancy Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin were going to discuss coronavirus aid and a must-pass government funding bill that was happening on late on Tuesday. No big hot takes came out of that meeting, so I don't think anything that was came out of their meeting. But they have been meeting and they have been trying to make something happen. And while all that's going on, the Justice Department is spending some money on a potential bribery for pardon scheme. They say a lawyer's involved, but half of the 18-page scheme on paper, I'll put it that way, has been redacted. So that means a whole lot of marked up names, everything crossed out of it. The White House has no comment on it. And of course, federal bribery crimes have to be charged within 5 years of their commission. And that covers the president's time in office, but includes the latter part of the Obama administration. Because I think people automatically somehow thought that it was this administration, but no, there's no indication of that, because there's no direct indication of what's really up with this, because it's just a lot of rumors. Although they did identify emails and they scoured 50 digital media devices, so iPads, iPhones, laptops, thumb drives, computers, external hard drives, all that stuff. That's what a judge said, so it's strange. It's like they released this redacted report, but everything that's redacted really didn't tell anything. And in the footnote, the judge said the email submitted by the government as exhibitions don't show any direct payments to redacted, by redacted, or redacted, and instead indicate that redacted expected, get it, redacted, to assist in obtaining clemency for their redacted due to redacted past substantial campaign contributions. So I think it was probably somebody who was looking to have something happen, and it did not. We'll see. We'll see where it all leads. Follow the breadcrumbs. Stay with us.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
President Trump has threatened to veto a defense policy measure until Congress repeals protections for social media companies. In a tweet Tuesday night, Trump threatened to veto the bill unless a repeal of Section 230 of the 1996 Telecommunications Decency Act was attached. The measure shields companies against liability for content posted on their sites. The president has maintained for months that social media sites were biased against conservative users. A federal panel has voted on who should be first in line to receive a coronavirus vaccine. The Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices recommended Tuesday that the first COVID-19 vaccine should be given to healthcare workers and residents of long-term care facilities. Those groups are estimated to number about 23 million people, and vaccinating them all will be difficult as vaccine supplies are expected to be initially scarce. Their recommendations now go to the head of the CDC for final approval. This is USA Radio News. Attorney General William Barr has appointed a special counsel to investigate the origins of Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. U.S. Attorney John Durham has been looking into the beginnings of the FBI investigation into alleged ties President Trump's 2016 campaign had with Russia. Barr said Tuesday he'd made Durham a special counsel to make sure he could finish his work with less risk of being fired. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley returned to the Senate Monday after testing positive for coronavirus and self-isolating. Welcoming him back, junior Iowa Senator Jody Ernst said her colleague is always working.
Whether he's working from his office here in the United States Senate or whether he's teleworking because of the virus, Chuck Grassley works. He is always working. Many of you have probably heard the Chuck Norris jokes out there. You know, the dark is afraid of Chuck Norris. Well, we have our own Chuck Grassley jokes, too. And right now, the COVID is afraid of Chuck Grassley.
This is USA Radio News.
Today, many of us are paying attention to our health, and what we eat plays an important role. But so often, the water we drink is a mere afterthought when it should be a primary part of our daily nutrition. Real Water would like to change how you think about the water you drink and how it can play an important role in helping your body restore balance and reach its full potential. The key benefits of every bottle of Real Water are stabilized negative ions, balanced pH, detoxification, and it hydrates you like never before. And yes, it tastes great. Real Water is beyond alkalinity, and due to its proprietary process, is called E2 technology, it's the only drinking water on the market that can maintain a stable negative ionization, which means real science in every bottle. Order your Real Water today and take advantage of special pricing for this audience only by calling 1-855-REALWTR or visiting buyrealwaternow.com. That's 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com. Order now, 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com.
Robert Nutman joins us this time around at Author's Corner. The name of his book is Project 19. Think terrorist attacks carried out by fanatical type people, zealots, that kind of stuff. And that's part of the story in a sense. I don't want to give it all away. I'm going to let Robert tell you all about it in his own words. Robert, thanks so much for popping on.
Okay, you're welcome.
So let's talk about the book and what Project 19 is. Tell us about the story.
Well, the story actually arose out of a whole series of events, basically out of my whole lifetime. But anyway, let's go to the idea of the story. First of all, it is actually it's several stories wrapped together, one of which is a perfectly feasible massive ransom attack on basically on the planet by people who are very wealthy, but obviously they want more than they've already got and decide to get more. That was the first thing, and the attack was made by the use of an artificial virus, man-produced virus, which was meant to terrify the world into enabling this crew to do a very large job on the stock exchanges of the world to make millions and millions of money. And the weapon used was this virus, and the subjects of people died. A lot of people died during the attack, and they thought they were really under attack by an actual epidemic or a pandemic, as it was going to become. And that's very strange. We should have one now. But it was going to happen, and people died, and the people in the story just happened to have got involved indirectly initially and were able to, bit by bit to defeat this plan. And it happens in various ways. There's a whole lot of stories all happening at once. Personal stories, and the actual tale itself, which is, and I must stress this, everything in the book could actually happen. It's all possible scientifically.
So for you in doing this story, I mean, it's interesting you say, look what's happening now, and with your background, what you know, what kind of research went into this? Because then you have characters and talking about what the possibility is and taking different stories. What was it like putting this book together?
Well, originally, putting it together was a long-term thing. I was always a storyteller, right from the time I was very young. I used to tell my kids stories. And in fact, my upbringing was purely, I was a reader. I was reading books by the time I was 4 years old. And I just devoured books my whole life. And you've got to love words and writing. And then I tried doing it myself later on as an extension and a way of expressing what I was thinking about how life was unfolding. I grew up just post Second World War in a world that's a very different place. And my upbringing was one. My mother was an English school teacher. My father was a soil microbiologist. And consequently, I was surrounded by information all the time, both literary and also scientific. And consequently, I developed an interest in these things. And the ideas for this came out of knowledge gained over a lot of years and a lot of thoughts and things which had occurred in my own life. And consequently, the story came out and I began to put it together. It wasn't the first thing I'd written, but it was the first attempt at a full-length novel. And it began to come out and I started putting it together. And like many things, it got put down for a while. And my wife discovered it on the computer and she said, "You better finish this, you know." one follows one's instructions usually from that angle. And I went to work on it. And not only that, there was some pressure. At the time, I was in the process of going blind. And I wanted to finish it while I could still have letters about a foot high on the computer screen to work from. And I managed to do that. So that, in a nutshell, is a little bit of it. But there's more to it than that. There's the story itself, but there's also reflections and observations on personal experiences and how I see relationships between people, friendships, loyalty, cooperation, and people who try to, if you like, muck in and do the right thing. And this was a story about that happening, and I meant it to be the first of several. In fact, the second book's on its way, which is a rather different thing.
And you talk about relationships, because you've had these relationships all, I mean, you've lived all over the world, right? So you're taking us on this adventure. How much of that gets dumped into your novel? I would think, as you said, that it has to be in there because you've observed people in different languages even.
Yes, I have lived at a number of different places, and also I have had a number of different relationships. This is not, the good lady you spoke to is not my first wife, and I'm not going to give you any numbers because that would be a giveaway. But the point is, I have been looking throughout life to try and find answers, and a lot of this came, again, from my background and upbringing. And one of the things that my parents, and I thank them for this indirectly and from a distance now, is that while I was growing up, I was never told what I had to believe. I was told where to look to find out what to believe or what to choose to believe. I was never forced into a political box or a religious box or in any kind of box in that way. And consequently, I was able to search for myself. And that's possibly why it came out the way it did.
What do you hope people take away from reading Project 19?
I hope they take away another view of life, because there is the big story around the whole thing is that it's a story about greed. Greed is the driving motive for the plan in the first place. And it is a lesson. I have found throughout my life that a lot goes on which you're not quite aware of, but then suddenly will impinge upon you. You think that if you behave honorably and correctly, for example, within a job, if you're loyal to your company and you're loyal to your boss and you're loyal to your company, that they will take care of you. Well, I discovered after a while that is not quite what happens, and as a lot of people find out in their lives anyway. And I've come to the conclusion at this, my advanced age, that most of what happens in most people's lives is not directed by them, but by forces outside them. And I was hoping that this book would make people a little bit more aware of that.
Right, because you talk about forces outside of yourself in the book, what happens and how the response is and what happens in connections with people and loyalty and all that plays a part in it, because who do you trust when there's billions of dollars and lots of lives at stake, right?
Well, yes. Well, basically, there's a gun being pointed at someone's head somewhere that you may or may not be able to do something about. And, you know, there are all these things going on all the time. And I think, you know, the sad thing is that most people are not fully aware of the fact that their lives are being run rather than they're running their own lives. There's a big difference between the two things. And growing awareness of that is important. And not only that, the age that I grew up in, we did not have social media, or as I call them, anti-social media, because it was all books. It was books and radio and conversation and observation. And you were not controlled or dictated to or manipulated as much then. Don't forget, we had just moved post-Second World War from a time when there was the most massive series of terrible disruptions, in particularly in Europe, or in fact with the world itself, where there had been dictators of very and horrible groups of them. There was the big one. There was Adolf. There was Joseph Stalin. There was Mussolini. There was General Franco. There were, and you can name them all over the planet. When manipulation had been of people, whole masses of people had been taking place, and enormous numbers of people had paid the very highest price for this. I only got to mention the Holocaust to mention one of the high prices paid. And in fact, this manipulation is a cycle within history. And in fact, the second book has got a lot to do with this, because this is not only true probably here, but elsewhere, wherever there is any civilized life, there's a cycle which goes through where control and death and fighting and corruption and all these things happen, when in fact people could really quite easily be a lot happier than they are.
Yeah, it's interesting. It completely makes sense. I'm thinking to myself what people have been talking about with social media and the narrative that they're fed versus, as you described, you had conversation, you listened to radio, you read books, and you were certainly raised where you were taught to have your own mind, to make up your own mind, and you weren't told you have to think this way or you have to look at things this way. And this is very much at play of what I think what we're seeing in the world today. And that's why Project 19 and subsequently your next book are incredibly significant. And I think it's amazing. And there's something about the fact that you finished this right before you went blind. And congratulations on the book. And I hope everyone picks it up. Robert, thanks for coming on.
You're most welcome.
SuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea builds red corpuscles in our blood, which carries oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate. Our immune system needs oxygen to develop. And cancer dies in oxygen. A 1-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.
As the coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, "It's never too late to be who you might have been." Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
It's not over. Sadly, our nation is going through tough times again, with no end in sight, and nobody knows what might happen next year. That's why it's a good idea to plan ahead, so you aren't caught off guard. Nothing's more important than having enough food to eat, and we're here to help. We're My Patriot Supply, America's leading emergency preparedness company. We provide long-term emergency food that lasts up to 25 years in storage. When grocery stores run empty or disasters strike, our foods will be there when you need it most. Act now and secure at least a 4-week emergency food kit full of tasty meals that provide 2,000 calories a day. We have dozens of emergency food storage kits to choose from. When the government tells you not to go out, you can have the peace of mind that comes from being prepared. When you order from MyPatriotSupply.com, your food will arrive discreetly at your doorstep in no time. Prepare today. Time is short. MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
By Michael Pauly. We had a great off-air conversation. Hell is the Night is the name of his book, and I know it's conjuring up all kinds of image, and I love it when a book nails what it talks about, and I think that's the whole deal here with Michael's book. Michael, thanks so much for coming on.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about, first of all, what is the book about?
Well, the book is about being caught flat-footed by an alien invasion, which, of course, is how anybody would get caught with an alien invasion. But early on, you lose your national command authority, and basically you're forcing old guys like me back into having to deal with it. And, of course, along with that comes with a boatload of people that don't know what they're doing because they're operating many levels above their pay grade. So it's how we would react to it.
Yeah, for you in diving into this in your book, have you always had a fascination with that? Because, you know, there's been so many television shows and movies and speculation about what's out there. Do you think about, hey, what's out there?
Well, any science fiction writer is going to think that way. I mean, it's kind of arrogant to think that we're alone, but then again, who am I to question? My real point to this was, what would happen if?
Yeah, what would happen
if? What do we have on hand? What can we do to counteract it?
Yeah, And so what do we have on hand to counteract it? Give us just, because we don't want to give away everything in the book, but tell us one thing that we could do to counteract it that you talk about in Hell is the Night.
Well, for one thing, you got to know your enemy. And intelligence is one thing. Gathering information about what their weaknesses are, and then trying to exploit those weaknesses. And we are quite capable of actually doing that with several of the weapon systems that are coming online or have been online. Well, for example, one of which is a hypersonic missile, which I'm sure you may have heard about in the news here in the last
year.
Well, what's interesting is I wrote this book in 2014, so I knew it was coming. So that whole discussion was kind of prescient.
Yeah. So, and again, Hell is the Night, the second Gomer Wars is the full title. As you said, you wrote it back in 2014, and it completely holds up. And it's a novel, and as you said, working in sci-fi, and you talk about General Patrick. What is General Patrick like?
Oh, General Patrick is an interesting kind of character. He's been thrust into having to hold the head, as it were. It's not something he wanted. It's, a lot of people, when they rise to higher levels of command, they want to be there. They've worked hard to be there. But what happens when you take some poor schmuck that's, like me, small-town country lawyer, and thrust him, based on his past experiences, back into the fray? He didn't want to be there. I'll be quite honest. This isn't about what he wants, and it's about what is needed. So that's the interesting, I think, part of that character. He has a long history, but that history is not something he wanted to ever exploit.
Yeah, and it's so funny because you talk about, it's not funny, but you talk about, like we just said, what do we throw at him? And that's what your imagination runs wild with that. So you have had to be somebody to weave a story like this that, like I was saying in the beginning, you're interested in what's out there, right? And thinking about what would the possibilities be like. So when you started to come up with the characters like General Patrick and what would happen and the president, President Blanchard and all that kind of stuff, was this really fun for you? For people who have written a novel and then you sit down, you come up with this, what was that like, that process?
Oh, I tell you what, I had a great time. And what's interesting is as I was writing the book, I would have a thought about where I want to go with it. But then I would get just shy of that and go, wait a minute, I'd rather go here. And so it was kind of a tale where I couldn't tell you how it was going to come out when I started writing it.
Yeah.
It kind of flowed, and it was a lot of fun. It really was.
So, and you keep writing. I mean, you got more books than you, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I got the first book in the series, and then I got the third one that hopefully about be out. We're shooting right now, I think, for February.
Nice. So what do you hope people listening to this interview and hearing us talk about this, Hell is the Night, the second Gomer Wars, what do you hope people take away from reading your book and your books?
Well, a couple things. Number one, I've tried to be as hard with the science as I could be. I know that some of the writers of the past, like H.G. Wells, didn't have a lot of hard science. But Heinlein and Asimov did. And I was hoping to bring along some of that hard science along with the logistics. You don't fight a war without logistics. Well, you don't even take a family to the beach without logistics.
So, boy, that's true.
When you start getting into something like this, you have to go with more to it than that. And so I'm hoping that the book demonstrates to people just exactly how much it takes to make something work and to take away some of the hard science.
Yeah.
I got a wonderful science advisor in my wife who's, great with science and math, and she did a wonderful job of helping me with some of that science research. I think I told you this before. If the science is right, she done good. If the science is wrong, then I didn't understand it. That's on me.
I love that. And we should say, because, you know, we talk to people on this show of all over the world, people from the UK, people from Australia, from Wales, from Brazil, from Ireland, etc. And there is a global bent to this because you incorporate the UK, especially in this, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's the UK, for example, the Michael Patrick's deputy commander is General Fuller, actually Field Marshal Fuller, from the British Army or the UK Army. And yeah, I mean, it's a bent that includes every nation that would be affected, up to and including Russia and China. Although yeah. Russia is somewhat of a less willing participant, and that's covered in the book too. And I'm not going to say too much because that's part of the story. So I mean, you can't fight a global enemy without a global approach.
Right. So you have to have cooperation. You have to have some kind of a relationship. So you talk about the relationships and how they stack up, and that can be tough when you have egos involved and you have. Hell that you're fighting, because that's, you know, that is the title of the book, Hell is the Night, because you're fighting something that's unknown.
Absolutely. Which is why we call them Gomers.
Yeah. I was going to say, how did you come up with
Gomers? If you knew where they were from, you would, well, I mean, if you knew where they were from, you'd refer to them as Martians or Venetians or whatever. But when you have an enemy that you absolutely have no clue where they came from, that's a Gomer. Sort of like a radar screen is going to say a bogey. These are just unknown, and hence the name Gomer.
I like it. So when I think of Gomer, I'm thinking of, you know, I've heard, and you gave the examples of a couple of other types of aliens. Could, you know, what's the wild dream of this? Could you see this? Because a lot of people now are thinking, well, you know, if I hit the right chord with my book, maybe it gets turned into something else. Maybe there is a movie or a series. Would that be like the wildest dream you could imagine for this?
Oh, it would be, as long as it wasn't, you know, cutting out certain characters. I think what's interesting is I had a movie treatment done on the first book, and they cut away one of the biggest characters completely. So, you know, I'd love to see it as a movie. I think it'd make a great movie. But I also would like to see it done more like Stephen King likes to see it done. I think he discovered that they cut a lot of his stuff initially, so he became more involved with it when he got to, say, example, The Stand. Stephen King became very involved with that, so at least the story was told.
Right,
and that's
right.
To me, the key is if the whole story is told, then that would be a great movie.
Right, and it is about telling the whole story, and we don't want to give it away. Pick it up. It's a perfect time for reading this kind of book, especially Michael Pauly, Hell is the Night, the Second Gomer Wars. Thank you so much, and good luck with all your future endeavors and what's coming up in maybe February.
I'm looking forward to it, and I thank you, Kate.
This is sponsored by Amazon. This holiday season, Amazon is delivering smiles to charities across the country with the help of celebrity partners Gabrielle Union and Ali Raisman. And it's easy for customers to join them in giving back. Kate Scarpa, Amazon spokesperson.
We're proud to support charities that have been impacted by the challenges of this year. And customers can also join us in giving back by shopping through Amazon Smile. By starting at smile.amazon.com, customers can find incredible holiday deals, low prices, and convenient shopping, with the added bonus that Amazon will donate a portion of their purchase price directly to the charity of their choice at no cost to them.
Customers can also donate items to charities directly at smile.amazon.com/charity lists, where nonprofits create wish lists of the items needed most. Additionally, shoppers can donate to Toys for Tots by saying, Alexa, donate to Toys for Tots, or make a monetary donation to a charity of their choice by saying, Alexa, I want to make a donation. Learn more and give back this season at smile.amazon.com.